Breaking news, a judge just ruling former Trump lawyer John Eastman should be disbarred. You'll remember Eastman is one of the key figures at the center of Trump's plot to overturn the 2020 election. In fact, he was known as the architect of the fake electors scheme. Jessica Schneider is out front following this breaking news for us. So this ruling is just coming in. What more are we learning?
Yeah, this was just moments ago, Erica. This is a California judge with the Attorney Discipline Court. She's recommending that John Eastman's law license be revoked in California. And this is a decision that follows a 34-day trial where more than a dozen witnesses detailed Eastman's scheme to undermine the 2020 election. And this also comes at a time when several of the attorneys who did back Trump or once back Trump are all in professional peril.
Do you still think the election was stolen?
Absolutely.
John Eastman and Jeffrey Clark are still defiant.
They've tried to destroy me, but I'm still standing and I'm going to keep fighting.
More than 3 years after they allegedly worked with then-President Trump to try to overturn the 2020 election.
Do you regret attaching your name to the former president?
None whatsoever.
John Eastman operated as the so-called architect behind the fake elector scheme. And Jeffrey Clark instigated an intense pressure campaign inside the Justice Department to try to get DOJ officials to help overturn the election for Trump. Now, both men are facing professional reckonings. Eastman and Clark have been sitting through attorney disciplinary hearings in recent weeks and months that could ultimately result in them losing their law licenses.
A criminal conspiracy.
They are also both defendants charged in the Georgia election subversion case.
I'm here today to surrender to an indictment that should never have been brought. It targets attorneys for their zealous advocacy on behalf of their clients, something attorneys are ethically bound to provide, and which was attempted here by formally challenging the results of the election through lawful and appropriate means.
Sandy Rios with you. That was a report from CNN about our next guest, John Eastman, and we're going to talk to him in just a second. But, you know, if you just listen to the language of that, news reports used to be, some quaint time long ago, news reports. But the adjectives that they threw into that report to unsuspecting people who don't know what the truth is are so biased. I'll give you an example. It was a plot, they said. John Eastman was involved in a plot. And it was a fake electors. No, they weren't fake, but fake electors. So we think they think they were. It was a scheme to undermine the 2020 election. They tried to overturn the 2020 election. John Eastman is the architect of the election scheme. The Georgia case with Fannie Willis is a subversion case. You see, I mean, that's how many? I mean, that's probably six right there in that one report. We're going to talk to John about what I believe is true about all of this, and he will join us in a second, and you don't want to miss it. This is history being made, and it affects each and every one of us. Well, last year, Preborn's network of clinics saved over 58,000 babies, and that's because of you. Thank you to all who made this possible. 58,000 babies. That's amazing. I want you to meet someone. Her name is Jabra. She's a young lady who found herself in an unplanned pregnancy and was strongly influenced to end her pregnancy at a Planned Parenthood clinic. Even as they administered the abortion pill, she felt cold and anxious. She fled home and started searching for how to reverse the curse, which led her to a Preborn network clinic. The nurse immediately administered progesterone and calmed her greatest fear, and her baby was saved. That's just one life, one story, maybe one stat for next year, but that's what you've been doing by helping Preborn supply ultrasound images for moms who don't really want to be pregnant or are frightened by it, or it's just a terrible time in their lives. And they're very tempted to end the life, but they don't because they see that baby. So thank you for all of that. If some of you have not given yet, I think you'll want to. Some of you may want to give more. If you do, go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy. Well, you know, maybe you don't know, this is Sandy Rios of Sandy Rios 24/7. You can call us at 662-821-2040. That's 662-821-2040. You can write us at sandy@afr.net. You can hear us on any podcast platform. You can also go to my website, sandyrios.com, and that's kind of an easy place to go if you're not If you're not familiar with podcasting, AFR.net is our home-based, always American Family Radio. Certainly you can find Sandy Rios 24/7 there. Well, meanwhile, this is really fascinating stuff, and it is history being made. So sit back and relax, but listen to this edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.
From American Family Radio, Sandy Rios.
We are not called to be nice. We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
I think the most important thing we need to demonstrate to our children is genuineness, that we actually believe what we say we believe.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
Seek justice. Not social justice, but God's justice. What's right and what's wrong.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
We've got to say this is the line. Life is sacred.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up. Speak up. Say something. Do something.
63-year-old John Eastman graduated from the University of Chicago Law School, clerked for Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas, and was dean of Chapman University's Law School in California. He views the world from the far right and has said the political left is an existential threat.
We're no longer disagreeing about means to get to shared ends. We've got wings of the two parties that disagree fundamentally on the ends and the purpose of our government.
Existential, you said.
Well, I do think existential. I think what we're seeing now in the criminalization of political opposition and the threat to shutting down speech of opposing political views means that the people are no longer in charge of the direction of their government.
Sandy Rios with you. We're going to interview John Eastman in just a second, but I just have to say, I just thought I'd let Scott Pelley introduce him this morning because he has such a great voice. Scott Pelley, of course, can't stand John Eastman. He had him on 60 Minutes, I think it was in January, and we talked to John about it, and they did everything they could to destroy him on that show, but he did such a great job of introducing him, I thought I'd let him do that. So, John, thank you for joining us this morning, and I want to read something from a friend of yours, Josh Hammer. He wrote this in Newsweek. He said, of you, he said that you were forced to retire from the law school where you were a longtime constitutional law professor and even dean, and that was Chapman. He was let go by the University of Colorado's Benson Center for Western Civilization, where he was a visiting scholar. The armed FBI agents suspended accosted him in a parking lot and seized his phone without a warrant. He has been suspended from academic conferences and lost board seats. He and his wife have endured death threats, spikes in their driveway, and threatening graffiti in their neighborhood. He's been debanked by Bank of America and the USAA. He's being criminally prosecuted by scandal-ridden Fulton County, Georgia, District Attorney Fonnie Willis. And last week, State Bar Court of California Judge Yvette Rowland devoted 128 pages to explaining why he should lose his law license. I wanted his words were so good, John, and I wanted people to hear that. So we haven't talked in a while. Your trial lasted 34 days in California to consider removing your law license. Tell people what the status is. Where are we?
Well, first of all, let me correct one thing that Mr. Hilly did in his introduction. The caricature of anybody that has views different than his is far right. It needs to be pushed back on every chance we get. But in any event, so yeah, after the most expensive and longest bar disciplinary proceeding in history, as one commentator claimed, the hearing judge issued a 128-page opinion recommending that I be disbarred. She doesn't have authority to actually disbar me. Only the California Supreme Court has that authority. The effect of that recommendation, though, is within 3 days to have an automatic suspension of my license or a placement of me on what's called involuntary inactive enrollment status. And it was quite ironic. The ruling came down on Wednesday of Holy Week. That meant those 3 days were Holy Thursday, Good Friday, and Holy Saturday. And then my license was suspended. I remain an active member of the District of Columbia Bar until they take reciprocal action. So I'm still able to practice law in the federal courts where I have cases pending on behalf of a number of clients. But the fact of the matter is the bar attorneys filed numerous false statements, material representations to the court, and in many instances she accepted them uncritically. I'll give you one example. One of the key issues in my advice was the unconstitutionality of the Electoral Count Act. They, in their brief, say, well, the Electoral Count Act had just been ruled constitutional the day before he gave his advice. That was so blatantly false. They claimed it was the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals, the second highest court in the land, many call it. It was not the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals. It was a trial court in D.C., and the case had nothing to do with the Electoral Count Act. It involved state statutes delegating certification authority to the governors. They quoted a doctored quotation from that opinion to make it say that something that it absolutely did not say. And then the judge repeated that doctored quotation verbatim, even though we had called it to the court's attention. These are the kind of things that exist throughout this ruling and throughout their briefing and statements during the course of the proceeding. Another example.
Yeah, John,
they introduced into evidence something that they knew was false. The Secretary of State of Michigan had put out a press release saying the election was conducted perfectly legally. That they knew that was false because by the time that press release was put out, the courts had already ruled certain aspects of the election were illegal. And yet they were allowed to introduce this hearsay false statement as if it were true. And then it's used against me. These are the kind of things that we're dealing with. And it was utterly corrupt.
And John, if I recall, you had a lot of people, not a few, testifying on your behalf, and especially on the election interference in various states. And correct me if I'm wrong, didn't the judge or the proceeding, didn't they refuse to let them talk? Didn't they get cut off? Is that correct?
We had a number of witnesses that were prohibited from testifying at all. We had a number of witnesses that were cut off on making various claims. I'll give you the most egregious example here. I had a leading expert, a CPA, head of one of the international societies, a CPA, spent his whole career doing audits of Fortune 500 companies, and he did an audit, a real audit, not a phony recount, but a real audit of election things. And he published a book and said, the book is called Debunked. It's worth everybody's read. Joe Fried is his name. And he said, there's no way these elections should have been certified given the amount of illegality that occurred. She refused to let him testify or have that book put into evidence because it wasn't published until January of 2023, even though the evidence he was looking at was the same evidence that I had before me at the time, and he was assessing it. That wasn't allowed in. But when the government decided to put in a study, a report that had been commissioned by Maricopa County, Arizona, to draw the conclusion that the election was perfect, nothing to see here, and that was published in September of 2022, again, long after the election, we objected. She said, well, that she asked the lawyers for the bar, and they said, well, this one gets in because it's a government report. And it got in. So the same criteria should have suggested either both of those things get in or both of them don't get out. But the government gets in because this is authoritarianism. This is Orwell, George Orwell's publication of 1984. This is the 75th anniversary year of that book. Very prescient in what he predicted, a little bit off, 40 years off on the year. But what he predicted was the government would get to the point where they would lie to you, and then they would force you to not only repeat the lie, but to come to believe the lie. And that's what's going on with this election stuff. They have lied to us repeatedly. Bill Barr, there was no evidence of fraud. Mr. Krebs, this is the most secure election in our nation's history. Those were laughable. And yet, if you don't repeat the lie, they will go after you to destroy you.
Well, absolutely, and it's like a cancer growing. And of course, these are things we're kind of assuming people understand a lot. And I think I need to maybe lay some basics down. John Eastman was President Trump's attorney on January the 6th. Prior to that, And on that day, he's the one that appeared on the platform wearing that
dapper hat.
I can put it. I was going to say that, but I thought I was going to say that because it was a dapper hat. And he was just saying that we were. I don't know if you mentioned the vice president on the platform, but you had written a paper in which you determined, because you're a constitutional attorney, you clerked for Clarence Thomas, you studied at the University of Chicago, and you know that I'm from Chicago, and we know that that's one of the finest law schools, at least it was, in the country. And so you determined from the Constitution that the vice president had the authority, that it was unclear. But you believed it was not unconstitutional for him to say, we need a pause here. Because what, 15 states were asking for that pause? Wasn't that right? 10 or 15?
Five or six states certainly asking, more than 100 state legislators who were heavily involved in looking at what had happened in their elections in their states and said this was done illegally. The elections should not have been certified. Give us a week or 10 days to try and sort out what, if anything, can be done about it.
And so this, of course, got you in the whole loop of enmity. Oh, that's maybe too strong of a word. At least people want that to be the case between you and Vice President Pence, because he had indicated that he had indicated without saying it that he was going to do that, and then he didn't do that on the day. So it was very dramatic. And of course, they had that fake guillotine up for him on January the 6th that we have never determined. Even the cameras can't seem to find out who put that up, because nobody was anywhere around it. We feel, personally, from following January 6th, the events of that day, I feel that that was a setup, because so many things were. But it's all looped into this like nefarious so-called plot, you know, to undermine the Constitution, to perform a coup, to make sure President Trump could stay in office, which is does not comport with the facts. And, of course, we have this 65 project, which is going after every single attorney to get them disbarred, including Rudy Giuliani, John Eastman. And now they're going after Jeff Clark. It's just and more. John, I don't even know what the count is. Do you know how many attorneys are facing?
More than 100. And one of the heads of the organization has said, our goal is not only to get them disbarred, but to make them so toxic in their firms and their communities that right-wing legal talent will never take on these kind of election challenges again. Think about what they mean. That means they're aiming to have unfettered ability to ignore laws, to commit fraud in elections, and scare everybody away from daring to raise their heads and challenge it. This is a destruction of our election system. It's a destruction of our adversarial system of justice. It's a criminal. It's the kind of thing banana republics do to their political opposition. The technology that makes it more like a Soviet Stasi. I mean, this is extraordinarily dangerous. This situation we're finding ourselves in as a country.
Yes, because when we won't be able to find an attorney that will take on our cases if we're conservatives. They don't dare. They won't dare, and it will be more totalitarianism. It's just a horrible step. You know, John, the thing that's just amazing about you, and I've said this to you many times, is that no matter what they throw at you, you will not bend and you will not break. In fact, I'm going to play, I think I'm going to go back and play that 60-minute opening with Scott Pelley, and you respond to him. And I just want to give people a taste of your courage, that you just, because you never waver on the truth. It's not a stubbornness. It's a conviction that this is true. Let's listen to clip one.
John Eastman says he's innocent, and he told us if he was ever guilty of anything, it was giving bold legal advice to Donald Trump. Eastman was a little-known law professor who found himself at the center of history, among the architects of President Trump's bid to stay in power. One judge called Eastman's strategy a coup in search of a legal theory. Today, Eastman faces 9 criminal counts in Georgia's election conspiracy case, and we found he's still handing out bold legal advice, this time to himself. Facing possible years in prison, he agreed to talk with us.
But that was the first advice I got from my legal team when I put them together, said we don't talk about anything. And in normal times, that's the right advice for lawyers to give their criminal defendant clients. But I quickly determined that this fight was much more about the criminal law, the specific law, and a public fight. We did nothing wrong. And it's important to counteract the false narratives on that because all of my actions were designed to investigate illegality in the election to see if they had an impact.
So that's just a taste of John's steadfastness. And you've never wavered. And I love it because I don't think many people are in that camp. I do think your acquaintance, Jeff Clark, who former attorney general, and I was just with Jeff at CPAC and actually interviewed him, John. The reasons they're trying to take his law license now he's in the headlines for the same thing, is because he wrote a letter that never even got sent, giving advice on Georgia. I won't go into that right now, but he told me that you guys cannot talk. You're barred from discussing anything with each other. Can you even comment on that?
The court order down in Georgia and the terms of our bond prevent us from talking about the facts of the Georgia case to any of the other co-defendants or any of the other witnesses. They've given us a list of 100 potential witnesses. So normally you get a gag order like that in order to prevent witness intimidation. But, you know, preventing people from actually, coordinating their defense strategy is a real step beyond what those kind of orders are normally aimed at. But, yeah, you know, we're obviously allowed to talk about other things, but we're not allowed to talk about the facts giving rise to the Georgia indictment.
All right. So, then don't say what you can't say. Except that on that indictment, are you guys charged? Are you charged with racketeering? Is that part of your charge?
Yeah, all 19 of the defendants, and then four have pled out, but all 19 of the defendants were included on count one, the racketeering. This is an abuse of the racketeering statute. They call it an association in fact. And for racketeering, there has to be an enterprise. A criminal enterprise that uses criminal conduct to advance their goals. There's no enterprise. The only claim of enterprise is that we were a bunch of people associated in fact by our concern about the election. That definition of the RICO enterprise would encompass about 75 million Americans. This is an extraordinary abuse of prosecutorial discretion. And one hopes that when the dust settles on the likely perjury by the DA down there and the felony recording of a phone call with one of my co-defendant's attorneys up in Maryland without consent, and Maryland's a two-party consent state, and a felony to violate that, one hopes that this DA will finally be forced to step aside and a more honest DA will be appointed to take a look at these charges and dispense with those that should never have been brought in the first place.
John, when I was in Chicago, and that's where I lived for many years, I was on the air there, and I raised my children there. Along the way, I made a really good friend with Joel Scheidler. You don't have to know who he is, but he was the founder of Pro-Life Action League. He used to be called the Green Beret of the pro-life movement. And Joe and I, I loved him. He had so much courage. So the National Organization for Women went after Joe, and the charge was racketeering. Because they charged him with, he was taking business from abortion clinics from his pro-life work. That was the premise. And it went all the way up to the Supreme Court, and he was actually in litigation for 20 years. I was in a press conference with Patricia Ireland. She was not with her. I was there, sitting there listening on the front row. As she was threatening Joe, she said, she was with National Organization for Women. She was the president. She said, we're going to take his house. We're going to take his car. We're going, just on and on. So it was so much like this, this is really not new, but it's just worse because the left has gained more power.
I know Joe's case well. They get this statute on the books, which was aimed at going after the mob. And then they expand it. It's like a camel's nose under the tent. And before you know it, the whole camel's inside the tent and you're sitting outside in the cold. That's what they've done. And these rogue prosecutors, whether in New York or in Fulton County, Georgia, or wherever, you know, creatively using statutes in ways that were never intended. Look, one of the lawyers on my team is a guy named Harvey Silverglate, who 15 or 20 years ago published a very important book called Three Felonies a Day. And he said, the law has become so expansive and the terms of the statutes are so vague that anybody the government doesn't like can be charged with three felonies a day. This is Soviet-style criminal justice. You recall the head of Stalin's NKVD, the Stalin's secret police, Lavrenty Beria, said, "Show me the man, and I'll find you the crime."
Oh, that's right.
This is what they are doing, yeah. And the Supreme Court has a case up there right now involving one of the J6 defendants, and he was charged with under the old mob intimidation statute. 20-year felony if you threaten a witness to prevent having to deal with that witness in a criminal trial, and then that was expanded to include destruction of documents after the Enron scandal to avoid prosecution. Well, they've creatively used that statute to say anybody that was protesting on January 6th was attempting to obstruct an official proceeding, and therefore they're going to get this 20-year felony. And the Supreme Court has taken that up, and I predict very overwhelmingly the court will say you can't manipulate these statutes to cover things that they clearly don't cover. And then that's one of the main charges against President Trump and Jack Smith's indictment against him. So, when the Supreme Court rules, those things will go away. But the fact that we've got prosecutors that are combing the books to try and find language that they can distort to cover things that were never intended is a serious problem. It's a violation of the prosecutor's oath of office here's a guy I don't like. I don't like his politics. I don't like his protests. I'm going to find something to go after him with, and then we'll throw away the key so that nobody else will want to stick their head up out of the foxhole.
I just met yesterday with a mom of one of the J6ers who's incarcerated through 2025. I knew about him since right after January the 6th. He was arrested immediately, and this is one of the big charges for him. And the reason he's having to serve for so long, he did nothing violent. It's just shocking how they're using that statute. I want to say, if I didn't, that Joe Scheidler did prevail. After 20 years in the Supreme Court, he finally won that case, which was just amazing. So I want to know people to know there has been justice in some of this, and we pray for that now. So I want to play. I want to play another clip. This time, I'm going to let Jake Tapper update us on your circumstance, and then I want you to respond to it, please, John. This is clip 7.
Today, former Trump attorney John Eastman, the father of the illegitimate theory that Vice President Pence could single-handedly overturn the 2020 presidential election, is now fighting to get back his law license as he faces some of the consequences of his actions around January 6, 2021. A disciplinary hearing last month stripped Eastman of his ability to practice law in the state of California. Eastman is arguing in a new court filing that he needs to be able to work as a lawyer so he can pay his own legal bill. CNN's Caitlin Polance is following the story for us. Caitlin, what is his basic argument besides he needs the money, and what comes next for him?
Well, right now for John Eastman, he can't practice law, and he's on the path to disbarment. But he is telling a judge in California who has made his law license inactive and said he has no remorse what he was doing for Donald Trump after the election. This is something that is in violation of his ethics codes as a lawyer. He's telling that judge he has bills to pay. Those bills are because it's quite expensive to be a criminal defendant. He is one, alongside Donald Trump in Fulton County, Georgia, for his 2020 election actions. He says his bills there are $1 million already, and if he goes to trial, which he says he wants to do to try and clear his name, his bills could be up to $3.5 million. So he wants to keep practicing law to be able to pay those bills. And what he's also revealed to this California attorney discipline judge, as he's trying to ask her to let him continue practicing law, he says, let me show you some of my clients. And those clients submitted letters and sworn statements to the court. They include the Colorado Republican Party, who has hired John Eastman to challenge the state's open primaries, and two Republican members of Congress, pretty well-known people, Matt Gaetz and Marjorie Taylor Greene, who say in their letters, there's no other competent, qualified attorney that they would trust like one John Eastman.
All right. So John, I let them tell your story a little bit, but fill in the blanks for us a little bit. Have you received a response on that at all, that request?
We have not received a response. It was filed last Wednesday. But, you know, I got to correct Mr. Tapper's claim. The notion that I was, my advice was that the Pence just simply gaveled Trump reelected. That's false. It's been demonstrably proved false. Even the New York Times finally had to admit that that story was false. My advice was to delay things. There were others that had floated the idea that because Pence has the ultimate authority to determine the validity of electoral votes, he could just simply reject those that were, clearly fraudulent or illegal. That was not my advice. But this is the narrative. You know, you get the narrative out there and you keep pushing it. The more often you repeat the lie, some people actually come to believe the lie. The second thing is, they focus on Matt Gaetz and Marjorie Taylor Greene. That's terrific. But one of my clients that they didn't mention is one of the most courageous 12-year-olds I've ever met in my life. His name is Jaden Rodriguez. You may not know his name, but you know his story because it went internationally viral. He's the kid that had a Gadsden flag patch on his backpack that was suspended from school because the vice principal said that the patch was a symbol of slavery. And this kid said, no, ma'am, it's not. It's a symbol of standing up for freedom against tyranny. And so he reached out, and I'm representing him and his challenge against the school district's actions. This is a kid who's so courageous. This is the leader of the next generation that I'll be happy to pass the baton to when it comes time to pass the baton. This is the kind of courage that free people require in order to remain free. And so it's not a surprise they didn't want to mention him as one of my clients, because that's a telling human interest story that they don't want out there.
Well, and in Matt Gaetz and Marjorie Taylor Greene and Colorado now, the Republican Party, because of what they did to get Trump back on the ballot, are all, you know, red flags for their audience. But John, you are appealing to this same bar groups, to the same judge, I'm assuming, who recommended you lose your bar license. Is it going to be suspended by them until appeal?
It's currently suspended until they rule on my stay, but that's the California license, so. Right now, I could not practice in California courts, but I remain an active member of the District of Columbia Bar. And as long as they haven't taken an action on reciprocal displacement, which they may well do, but I still have an active bar license, which means I retain my ability to practice in federal court. And even if my license is suspended in both, the California rule very specifically says I can continue to do preliminary work like research and drafting of briefs. I just couldn't make an appearance. So, you know, this will not stop me from representing or, you know, helping clients vindicate their constitutional rights. It may shift how I do that, but we are on the precipice of losing the rule of law in this country. And that means we've got to fight no matter what they throw at us. People can follow this. I do updates on my website. It's my Legal Defense Fund website is called givesendgo.com/Eastman. And I post updates there. People can donate to help us with these legal fees. Most importantly, they can send prayers that my wife and I read, and they're heartwarming. And so I'd encourage people to go there and just get themselves informed of the kind of things we're dealing with.
Yes, and they can help you financially because, as you say, as they said on your behalf, you're facing possible as much as you've already spent hundreds of thousands of dollars and had to make huge adjustments in your personal life. I know this. And you're facing as much as maybe $3 million in Georgia. And again, the reason why we would want to help John is because an attorney like him is rare. And we're going to have, if you want to make it selfish reasons, Lynn, let's do that. If you want to have an attorney represent you and some, let's say that your boss fires you because you have a cross on or whatever happens, anything that's like that will be anathema to attorneys. They won't touch that if John can't prevail. And so we need to help him. It's givesendgo/Eastman. I want to also point out, John, your kids wrote the most beautiful tribute to you. It's called The Heroic Sacrifice of John Eastman. It was published in The Blaze at the end of March. And it was written by your son, Benjamin, and your daughter, Christina, who's now Christina Wheatland. Are they attorneys, John?
Neither one of them. My son's an astronautical engineer, and my daughter is Well, she's a professional violinist, but she's also now heavily engaged in helping conservative organizations with development and those kind of things.
Yeah. Well, let me just say, I want to read a few phrases, if you will allow me. They say, our dad is well equipped for this battle, and while some individuals have lent their support to his efforts, too many have remained on the sidelines. I would agree with that. Then they also say, Holy Week brought a new set of horrors. An action we foresaw based on the predictable conclusion of lawfare was taken Wednesday, and that shook two centuries of American jurisprudence to its core. After what one commentator has described as the longest 32 weeks of trial over 10 weeks, in parentheses, most expensive, more than $500,000, bar trial in this country's history, a bar court judge has continued to make donations to Democratic politicians even after taking the bench has recommended the disbarment of Eastman. Then they go on to say, while it might seem a little heavy-handed to compare the work of Eastman and others to the passion and death of Jesus Christ, because this is written during Easter, a little reflection can make clear the connections. Jesus was betrayed and unjustly condemned because he preached a gospel message that was contrary to the desires of the ruling class. Eastman had been betrayed and indicted for speaking up about election illegality and fraud, contrary to the desires of the political establishment and the mainstream media. At stake is the very soul of our nation, which was founded on Judeo-Christian fundamentals of truth and justice. So this Holy Week, Eastman will indeed be taking up a cross, attempting to protect the institutions of our nation that guarantee our religious freedom and our American way of life. And one more thing. They say, again, our dad is well equipped for this battle, and while some individuals have lent their support to his efforts, too many have remained on the sidelines. The will to persist is derived from the very meaning of Holy Week. As we close the week, join our family in drawing comfort and strength from the words of our Lord. Blessed are they which are persecuted for righteousness' sake, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are ye when men shall revile you and persecute you and shall say all manner of evil against you falsely for my sake. Rejoice and be exceedingly glad, for great is your reward in heaven. Living by these words has made Eastman, that's their dad, by the way, a happy warrior and has helped him lead his family through the storm. Truth and justice will prevail. My goodness, John, even if you lose your law license and you lose your home and everything, I just think the reward of having raised kids like that who are carrying the baton for the next generation is great. So many people have, they have success and they are not showing courage and they have families, but they don't have kids like this. And I just think that's a tremendous tribute to you.
Well, thank you very much, and to my wife. And no, I did not put them up to this. they wanted to do this on their own, and the good folks over at the Blaze very quickly agreed to publish it, and it was profound, and it went viral, and people are seeing the message. Look, right before Christmas, the LA Times wanted to do a human interest story on how devastated I was and how my family was embarrassed by me and all that. And I get this question from the reporter. I said, what are you talking about? Our country is on a precipice. We are about to lose precious freedoms that our founders fought for and died for and then bequeathed to us. And for whatever reason, I've been cast in a role on the front lines of this battle. I can't think of something more important to do with my life and my expertise than fight to secure the freedoms for my kids like that, and across the country, and grandkids and future generations. So, this is what our life has become, but it is a fight worth having. It is the fight for our time. It's comparable to the fight that our founders had. It's comparable to the fight that Abraham Lincoln had. It's comparable to the fight that our grandparents waged in World War I and World War II. This is a fight for freedom against a government that is becoming increasingly oppressive, authoritarian, even totalitarian. And if we don't stand up to fight, Ronald Reagan's prescient prediction will come true. Freedom is only but one generation away. And if we don't stand up to fight for it, we lose it.
Absolutely. I'm in the fight with you, John, and I believe the same thing. This is our time. This is our fight. Our parents fought, and now it's our time to do the same. A couple of practical things before I say goodbye to you. You're appealing now. You have to, don't you, to the California Supreme Court, or is that after Is that the next step?
We appeal. It goes first to the Bar Review Court, and then it goes to the California Supreme Court. And because what's been done here, in my view, is such a blatant violation of my First Amendment rights of speech and the right to petition the government for redress of grievances, that there are federal constitutional issues at play that for which we could ask the U.S. Supreme Court to weigh in as well, if necessary.
Okay, so a long road, but I love your determination, and I love your steadfastness. I love it. I do, John. Thank you so much. John Eastman, our guest today on Sandy Rios 24/7.
This is Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
Last year, Reborn Network of Clinics saved over 58,000 babies. I told you that earlier. And that's because of you. It can't happen without your help. 58,000 babies just last year. Some of you are able to pay $28 for an ultrasound, and you've done so generously. Doesn't merely matter how much, it's how much you can afford and what God lays on your heart. Some of you have more means. You can pay more than $28 or give more than $28. And if you have that means, would you consider a leadership gift to save babies in a bigger way? A tax-deductible donation of $5,000 would sponsor Preborn's entire network for 24 hours, helping to rescue, on average, 200 babies. Is that something you could do? If so, go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy. And let me thank you again, always, for your generosity. Hi, this is Sandy Rios, and I miss you in the mornings. But now I'm hosting a podcast, Sandy Rios 24/7, which is available at afr.net and sandyrios.com. Well, I finally finished that book. God's Velvet Hammer chronicles God's call in my life from a small town girl to Berlin, Germany, Radio Moscow to North Korea to Washington, D.C. I talk about Sasha Girl. That was my disabled daughter. I talk about I've Got the Music in Me. That's a chapter on my music life. Lost in India and Other Adventures is hilarious. You won't want to miss it. I talk about my sweetheart, The Blessing of Bruce. And then a mysterious chapter called My Green Face and the End of It All. Oh, I think you'll enjoy it. Like the Apostle Paul, these are my shipwrecks and my adventures. All for Christ and His kingdom. God's Velvet Hammer is available wherever books are sold. And remember, Sandy Rios 24/7 is available at afr.net and sandyrios.com.
Joining me now to discuss is Ankush Kadori. He's a former federal prosecutor. He currently covers legal issues for Politico magazine. Ankush, thanks so much for joining us. Welcome to The Lead. Let's start with what we just heard about John Eastman. Does he have a strong legal argument when he claims that being a lawyer is his livelihood and he needs to be able to practice law to pay his bills?
I don't think it's a particularly strong legal argument. It's possible that the courts will have some sympathy for him. It's impossible to predict how they will resolve it. But I don't think this is a sympathetic argument at all. I mean, this man was a very bad lawyer, and he did a very bad job in quite possibly the highest stakes setting we could imagine in the run-up to January 6th and on January 6th. He really shouldn't be practicing law, and I don't know where Matt Gaetz and Marjorie Taylor Greene have been looking for lawyers, but he is definitely not the only competent lawyer that they can find. There are many, many more.
We know of two other former Trump attorneys who have taken plea deals in that Fulton County case to avoid trial, Sidney Powell and Kenneth Chesbrough. You interviewed John Eastman last year. Do you think his financial situation could affect his approach to the charges he's facing in Georgia?
I doubt it. And the reason why I say that is because when I spoke to him last year, as all this stuff was still underway, this proceeding was still underway, he was quite strident. And I think even to this day, he really has not acknowledged any kind of error or mistake or note of contrition throughout this whole proceeding. He seems to want to fight this until the last possible opportunity. And if he can't pay for his lawyers, many people can't pay for lawyers. They get public defenders.
I thought that was interesting. And so I thought that was a good time to bring in my husband, the former prosecutor for Cook County. That's Chicago, Illinois, former FBI agent, just to get his thoughts on at least that statement. That was Jake Tapper on CNN.
Well, I think this is very disturbing to listen to this former federal prosecutor, whoever he is. There's lots of former federal prosecutors. Does not mean they're an expert by any means.
They might be former for a reason, right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I'll tell you, this seems to be a common theme among these people that are pushing for the really the destruction of the January 6th participants, whether they be the attorneys or the people that were in the Capitol. And that is, if you listen to that person that just spoke, he used the word contrition. And there's a lack of contrition on John Eastman's part. Well, I would hope there is a lack of contrition, because John Eastman believes what he did was legal and was proper. And if you read the, to go further on that trail, if you read a statement by the judge, Yvette Roland, who has been presiding over this disciplinary hearing in California of John, she uses the words, a complete and total lack of remorse on Eastman's part. Now, I'm telling you, courts are not about contrition and remorse. Courts are supposed to be about finding the facts. And whether you are contrite or not has nothing to do with what the facts are. And John's situation is perilous, but really it's only a symptom of what's going on in this country. And that is basically an entire attempt to suppress people who do not agree with the current administration or do not agree with the views of the left. You have the use of law enforcement, whether it be the FBI or other governmental law enforcement agencies, intimidating people, arresting them at dawn with tactical vehicles, automatic weapons, pulling people out into the cold, when really they're just people who walk through the Capitol and are still living where they were then, and if you wanted them to come in and surrender, they would do that. Just tell them, come to our office tomorrow at 9 o'clock and give yourself up. I'll bet they would show up. You have the use of the courts, which we are seeing in John's case. You're now hearing the term lawfare. Lawfare is a real thing that's going on. It's not some abstract concept. The courts are being used through... as John was talking, the misinterpretation of laws to charge people with crimes. And you're also seeing the use of professional organizations, whether they be the bar associations or people that say they're dentists and they were accused of going into the Capitol on January 6th. They're pulling people's licenses, calling them insurrectionists.
And they're not even charged with it.
But they're calling them that. They're also using these charges to shame people and to intimidate people that are your. Why do you think the FBI comes with those tactical vehicles to arrest people? It's because they want to embarrass you in front of your neighbors, alienate you from your neighbors, possibly alienate you from your family because they're ashamed of you. This is a very overarching thing that, while John's case is very serious, I want to tell you, it is nothing more than a symptom of what the real problem is.
You know what really struck me about that, Bruce? Those were great, great observations. But the thing that struck me is the surprise that John Eastman won't say he's sorry. I want to point out that in the J6 trials, one of the methods, if some of you who've listened to me now, since I was doing the morning show and we've covered this since it started, many, many people agreed to sign like virtually recantation statements to say that President Trump was the one that did that to them, caused them to come because he lied to them, that they don't believe it anymore, it was a lie, and that Joe Biden is really the president. They have to sign statements like that to get plea deals. And that's not, Bruce, could you just restate, is that typical of courts in our country?
Absolutely not. If you go, I was a prosecutor for many years, say someone is convicted of murder, they do not have to get up in front of the jury and say, I'm sorry, or get up in front of the judge and say, I'm sorry. There is a mechanism for that. Later people are allowed to give statements before they're, after they've been convicted. But again, the key word is after they have been convicted.
So they have freedom. They still have freedom of thought. You can think what you want.
Yeah. Proving yourself innocent does not require part of it to be, I'm sorry for what I did.
This is like the Reformation, the recantation, Martin Luther. You must recant that you believe that you could be saved by grace. It's the same principle of so many totalitarian, horrific rulers, Russian, North Korean. You have to agree. You have to say you agree. Say this, you know, in order to survive.
And what's really amazing is the constant and the repetitive misstatement of what was being attempted by Eastman and his team through President Trump and potentially through Vice President Pence back on January 6th. They keep saying that it was an attempt to overturn the 2020 election or to overthrow the 2020 election. That is not what they were doing. All Eastman was advising Vice President Pence to do is ask for a stay, that means a delay. Ask for a delay in the counting of the electoral voters so that further investigation can be done to determine whether the elections were carried out in a fair manner,
in a
legal manner.
And laws on the books weren't broken in the process.
This was a request,
he corrected me, I think it's 5 or 6 states. This was a request from the states themselves. So it's twisted. You know, it's like I started responding to that clip. It's subversion. It's a plot. It's fake elector. It's a scheme to undermine the 2020 election. John Eastman's the architect of the election scheme. These are the words that they use, and all of them are just total mischaracterizations of what really happened.
You know, the left, as you say, they always engage in doing the things that they accuse the right of doing.
Yes, they do.
And in this case, they always talk about that the right uses dog whistles. Well, nothing could be more of a dog whistle than those terms you just used. Plus, when they keep saying Eastman is going to represent Matt Gaetz and Marjorie Taylor Greene, can you imagine two more dog whistle names throw out?
Yeah.
To try to tar John Eastman as a bad guy.
Yeah. No, I can't. And so they did that intentionally. Well, that was fascinating. Honey, thank you. And that was a fascinating discussion with John. I hope you all agree. And if you do, share this with your friends. I mean, honestly, the only way we're going to combat what people are hearing is for you to share it. And, you have to know that for the most part, I don't know, Facebook and even Google searches are just so blocked. And maybe Instagram, whatever it is you're using, because Instagram's part of Facebook. And I think so. One of the best ways to share with your friends is just email, the old fashioned. For now, until Gmail starts censoring us, which I'm sure will come if we don't keep fighting here. But share with your friends effectively. You can try it certainly on your other social media outlets. Better to try and fail than not to try at all. But I hope that you will do that. Share this show so that people can know what's true here with John Eastman and the others. All right, I want to thank you for listening today. You know, our phone number is 662-821-2040. You can always write us at sandy@afr.net. You can find us on any podcast platform. afr.net is American Family Radio, my mothership, the group I've been working with them for almost 11 years, probably 11 years now. And that's where the podcast is. That's the home base, but it's on other podcast platforms as well. You can find it at sandyrios.com. It's easy to listen to there if you're not used to, going online and doing podcasting and apps and all of that. So sandyrios.com is a great place to go. All right. Well, listen, thank you so much for listening. I so appreciate it. I appreciate you listening to today's edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.